time now for Community Circle, circling the things that matter for you and your neighbors. Community Circle is a service of Sierra H Broadcasting.
Hello and welcome to Community Circle. My name is Frederico, and today we're going to talk with Christina Sabetta, an executive consultant from Mental Health America of Arizona. So Christina, tell us a little about yourself.
All right. I'm Christina Sabetta. I'm an executive consultant with Mental Health America of Arizona. Mental Health America of Arizona has been around since 54. Our mission is really to be a voice for those living with mental health issues as well as their family members. We do so through education, outreach, and the shaping of public policy.
What are some key things to look out for when, you know, you're observing a family member, you notice some differences? What are some things that a family member could notice that would help them identify them?
Yeah, so I'm going to go through a list of a couple of things because, you know, there's so many different mental illnesses. So it's important to really sort of see the different symptoms that one might be dealing with. Feeling sad, extreme mood changes, withdrawal from friends and activities. So they may be coming to sporting events at one point and maybe withdrawing at other points. Inability to concentrate, confusion, excessive anger, fears or worries, extreme feelings of guilt. Many times folks will detach from reality, so they'll see or hear things that really aren't there. Inability to cope with stress, alcohol or drug abuse, changes in eating habits or sleeping habits. And lastly, the big one is suicidal thinking, so making comments that they feel they would be better off if they were no longer here.
Okay, well, so that's because I was going to think, you know, a lot of the emotions, they're sad, they're teenagers, they get sad. I mean, if you're a parent, at what point do you say, no, you know, this is something more than them being sad? What are some key markers?
You know, after about 2 weeks, I would definitely speak to a mental health professional or your doctor about what you're seeing and talk to your child about that. Have that conversation. Ask them what they're dealing with. You know, it's very common for us to be dealing with depression after certain stressors in our life, or we may lose a job. Right. And so we may lose the job and we may be in a depressive state. But if that depressive state continues and we see some of these other symptoms, then it's something that we really need to pay attention to and do something about.
OK, so what about the person, my kid's always like kind of nervous. You know, he's always kind of shaky. You know, is there an indicator where you'd be like, OK, that's beyond? Because, you know, like when you're a parent, you see your kid every day or a relative or an adult, you know, sometimes you'd be like, you're so used to seeing him. He's just nervous today. Or like, he always gets nervous before a game
sure,
or something.
Sure.
At what point is it like, OK, ding. You know, this is beyond that.
That's hard to really determine what that point is, right? Because you know your child the best. But what I would always recommend is have a professional, have a doctor take a look at that as well and sort of give you that second opinion. If it's really changing, if the child always is a bit nervous, but you see now that the anxiety or the nervousness is growing and you see it really impacting their life more now than it was before, that's something to really keep an eye on and look at closely.
What are the dangers if, you know, this goes undiagnosed or just ignored or you don't get help? What are some of the things that can happen?
You know, the biggest one, the most obvious one is suicide. One person dies by suicide every 15 minutes in this country. That's alarming. I mean, we should be having conversations like this on the radio when we're looking at these stats. It's the 10th leading cause of death in the U.S. It's the third leading cause of death for people ages 10 to 24. And it's the second leading cause of death for people 15 to 24. So it's really important to remember is that if this goes left untreated, this could happen. The other important thing to remember is people with mental illness are much more likely to develop additional illnesses like heart disease, diabetes, stroke, respiratory illnesses, because of that impact. So if we're struggling with mental illness and we go untreated, say we're struggling with depression, we just lose a job, we're more likely to find unhealthy ways to cope with other things, right? So we may overeat, we may binge drink, we may start smoking, drug or alcohol abuse. We find other ways to sort of cope with that mental illness that we're dealing with. So the longer we wait to treat that, the worse off it's going to be and the more problems we are going to have to be dealing with.
Christina, going back to the stats about suicide you know, eye-opening for sure. But, you know, some people, they connotate suicide with some traumatic event in their life, you know, and that's not the case. And, you know, it's important to get the word out. I mean, you know, we talked about the science to see, but like give a little bit, maybe like average Joe that goes into suicide that didn't have a traumatic event. Educate the people about suicide isn't just about a traumatic event, isn't just about guys who come back from Iraq. It's more than that. Do you know anything about brain functions, the chemistry that would trigger things like suicidal thoughts or just being like a manic depressive person?
Suicide's tough, right? But You know, going through that list that I did originally, those are really the signs of the symptoms that could lead to that untreated mental health issue, which could lead to that suicide. So it's really important for us to pay attention to those. You know, we hear from so many family members who have lost loved one to suicide and didn't see any signs. And that's possible. But many times there are signs and there are things that were occurring before they got to that place. Most people don't want to die by suicide. Most people want to get the help they need, but they can't, or they're afraid. They have stigma around them, and they're too proud to ask for help. They're too strong to ask for help. And so we really need to be able to encourage people to get the help that they need. We have a campaign called Before Stage 4, and we really want to focus on, before you're in Stage 4, right, we want to focus on getting you the help you need, preventing some of these mental illnesses, preventing some of these suicides, because people deserve it. People don't need to be in crisis in Stage 4. So rather than trying to fix someone in Stage 4, let's worry about getting them the help they need and services prior to that.
You know, in the Latino and in the African-American community, you know, there is a stigma with mental illnesses. Oh, you know, you're weak in the head, or oh, you know, he doesn't know how to deal with problems. Like it's some kind of, you know, educational form when, you know, or something you can do. You know, like you're not as tough as one as you should be. But that's not the case. You know,
absolutely, absolutely not. And stigma's huge, right? So if we're dealing with a family member who has cancer, how do we act? We bring them casseroles. We send them text messages. We send cards. We wrap our love around them. If someone has a mental health issue, how do we act?
We leave them alone.
Right?
We alienate.
Leave them alone. They're no fun anymore. Or they're drinking too much. Or we got this issue and that issue. We need to provide that same support. It's a disease. Just like cancer, it's a disease and we need to do what we can. You know, I think stigma is a big one, as you mentioned. And I just want to, if I could, just draw on a couple common myths that we have about mental illness. People think people with mental illness are dangerous. That's not the case. They're no more violent than someone suffering from cancer or any other form of illness. In fact, folks with mental illness are more often the victims of violence than the perpetrators of violence. Another common myth is most people with mental illness live on the streets or in mental health hospitals. That's definitely not true. About 2/3 of Americans who have a mental illness live in the community and lead very productive lives. I'm a survivor of bulimia, a serious eating disorder that really transpired around the age of 20 when I went to college, started to really sort of focus on my career and started to lose control over my own depression. I was diagnosed with depression at 15 and really didn't get the appropriate help and support I needed. I grew up in a very rural community and there was a lot of stigma around mental illness, what it is. I had my own stigma as well as my family carried that stigma as well. So I really never got the help I needed and found that bulimia was a way of me coping. It was a way of me having control and having power back in my life. And it wasn't until I had became so malnourished, passed out from the bulimia, that I really realized there's something else out there for me. And that's really how I became an advocate for mental health and am doing what I can now to give back and really educate folks. After that, I graduated with my master's. I became a CEO. Now I'm in consulting. I led a very, very successful, productive life. I'm not homeless. I'm not violent. I look and talk normal, right? And so mental illness is just so common. And we really need to be able to talk about this, like we're talking about now, share personal experiences to eliminate some of that stigma. You know, the other two main myths are mental health problems don't affect me. Sure they do. 1 in 4 Americans have mental health issues. If you personally haven't been affected, you know a friend or a close family member who has been. If you haven't been, it's just a matter of time before you are. And mental illness can't be treated. That's the other thing we hear. Well, why reach out for help? Because it's not going to be treated anyways. Treatment rates for some mental illnesses such as depression are really high as up to 90%. So there really is no reason for someone not to reach out, get the help they need and the help they deserve, because living with that mental illness is just no fun for that individual or the family member going through it.
Going back to your personal story.
Yeah.
At what point was it someone who led you to get help, or was it like self-discovery? Did you hit a low? What was it that led you to get help for your problem with the bulimia?
Yeah, good question. I think once I realized that I was no longer able to control my own depression. And so I think I was, as a social worker, I thought I had all the tools to deal with my own issues. And self-help was my main tool. And once I started relying on those very unhealthy ways to cope with it and found myself in a hospital being malnourished, I realized that I really needed to do something different. So for me, spirituality was a big thing. I realized then that I really needed to turn towards my faith and focus on that spirituality piece to help get me through that. I did reach out to my family. They had a hard time understanding. They came around and supported me. I think they still have a hard time understanding. But they did what I needed to do, and at times I needed to help coach them on what I needed from them, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
The other thing is I did some therapy. I personally struggled with therapy a little bit as a social worker myself, but that helped. And lastly, I did take some medication, and that was life-changing. Now for me in my recovery, I still take small doses of medication every day. Diet and nutrition is huge for me. Getting that exercise just clears my mind, allows me to focus and cope. I know when I'm having a depressive state, my husband knows, Christina, you need to get to the gym. You need to get outside and get some exercise. So now I really focus on the help of the medication because it is a chemical imbalance, and that helps keep me balanced and keeps me happy, which I deserve to be happy. Then the other thing is diet and nutrition and spirituality has really what has allowed me to stay in recovery now and be the wife and the mother and the staff and the consultant and everything else that I can be.
And you bring up chemical imbalance, and I think people don't necessarily understand what that is. They're like, oh, well, you know, when I'm drunk, I'm chemically imbalanced. And that's not the case. I mean, can you tell us a little more about like the function of the brain? Talk about like what is going on in the brain, something like depression hits.
That's a tough question because that's not really my area of expertise.
Okay. I mean, just like a general kind of synopsis, you know, not specifically into like, you know.
For me with my depression, the chemical imbalance is really the balance between the serotonin and the dopamine and not getting enough of one. And so sunlight, light, outside helps. That sort of free serotonin that makes me feel better, right? But that's also something that the medication helps me with as well. And so balances those two out.
And then, you know, going back to the personal story, it was interesting because like even I haven't connotated that depression can lead to other mental conditions, you know, and other physical conditions. Like we talked about, like, you know, diabetes and living an unhealthy lifestyle, but also to like bulimia and anorexia, I would imagine. And they kind of stem from the depression. It's not just a body shaming issue. Would you say a lot of cases of, you know, these type of diseases where people have bulimia or anorexia stem from like a depression of some sort?
Many times they do. Many times it's their way of coping with the mental health issue that they're dealing with. In my situation, that's exactly what it was.
Now, do you see other habits / diseases that stem from depression a lot of times? I mean, yeah, you gave me a whole gamut, but is there anything that sticks out more than others?
A lot of physical health issues are connected to depression. So like I said, the heart disease, obesity, those are really related mostly to depression versus other mental health issues.
Now, if you're a parent or you have a family member and you start seeing these signs, you start identifying them, what steps can they take? Honestly, we're very bad, not just as a city or a state, but as a country. I think we're really bad about identifying and finding sources of way to help mental health until it's gone very far. Where could one start seeing these signs, where can one go to get help?
So a couple things. The first thing I would say is have the conversation. Let's talk about it. Just like if your child had diabetes, if your child had cancer, you'd be talking to them about it. Talk to them about the mental health issues. Talk to them about the signs and the symptoms that you're seeing. We have on our website, www.mhaarizona.org, we have a screening tool. And so we've actually had about 40% of the 10,000 that have taken our screening are actually youth, which is really exciting that people are aware of what might be going on. And so what that screening does, it'll take you through sort of some signs and symptoms that you may be dealing with that I went over in the beginning of the show. And it'll also give you some possible recommendations of what you might be dealing with and some options of treatment options or referrals in your community. So one thing they'll connect you to my agency, Mental Health America, our referral line, who you can call and we can help give you local information that would be in line with your insurance. So I think having the conversation, right, reaching out and letting them know you're there to help them, not judging, being respectful to them, just like you would with anyone else, or again, like you would with someone who had cancer, learning and sharing facts about mental illness, reminding them that, hey, I heard Christina on the radio the other day, she said 20% or 25% of Americans live with mental illness. This stuff is common. Refusing them to define them by their diagnosis And so reminding that, hey, I'm Christina, I'm so many things, and living with depression and being a survivor of bulimia is just one part of who I am. And so reminding not to look at them as crazy, not to use those stigmatizing words, not to look at them as the depressed or the individual with schizophrenia, but someone who's your child, your loved one, a human being who's struggling and needs that help. So as I mentioned, we have a lot of great resources on our website. You can also call Andy in our community. I'm going to share that number. That's 480-994-4407. And he can give you individualized assistance regarding community services, especially mental health services. He's really sort of our go-to in our community to connect people to the resources. But again, the biggest thing is really sort of just reaching out, having that conversation, making sure they're aware. You know, I mentioned that screening. Initially, when we have that conversation, folks may be in denial, may have that stigma. So I would encourage, let's just try this screening. Maybe you're not dealing with any mental health issues right now. Let's just see what someone else has to say.
What is that website again?
MHAarizona.org.
Okay, and we'll have that up on our website, azthebeat.com. And also, we'll have, you know, clips of the show, and we'll also have Andy's number, and we'll have it on the website. So if you're listening and you want more information, you can go to the website. Give it out one more time, the website, for take a screening.
It's www.mhaarizonaspeltout.org.
So, like, let's say I'm listening right now, and it's like, hey, you know what? Maybe these are signs. Can you go there, take the screening for somebody? And I have a nephew, he would never do this, but like, hey, can I see maybe what's wrong with him?
Sure, you could take the screening for someone else. I think it works best if you're taking it for yourself, right? Because you know better than anyone what you're dealing with. But right. You could definitely take it for a family member or a loved one.
Okay. And I guess, you know, Christina, another important, you talked about people, stigma or things that kind of cast a negative light on people with mental illness. And it's like, you know, the word crazy. And what are some other triggers that like kind of set people in the wrong direction? You know, we talked about like if someone has cancer, you send them a lot of love and hope to get better. Same thing. But is there stuff that with this being such a, I don't want to call it a taboo subject, but, you know, something that hasn't been in the light for many people in many families. Are there things that they can do to make it worse? What can they avoid doing?
Think what? They want to make sure they're talking about it. They want to make sure they're talking about it and having a conversation about it. Not having the conversation stigmatizes that individual and stigmatizes the issue and also makes them feel as though they've done something wrong or they're to blame for having this issue. No one's asking to have a mental illness, right? And so we need to understand that. We really need to become educated on that. Each illness is very different. So someone with depression, telling them, you know what, just get over it, figure it out, get to work, get to school. That's not going to help. Let's take a look at what they're struggling with. Let's help them with that depression so they have the energy to get out of the bed and do it their daily duties. Someone with paranoia might get anxious if we're staring at them or taking notes or being on our phone. So it's good to become educated on those different illnesses when dealing with someone who we care and we love for.
Is there any specific things you see in the city of Phoenix that are going untreated, or is there something that sticks out in Phoenix more than other places or things to watch out for when talking about mental health in the city? I know, like you said, not every person ends up being homeless or anything, but are there things in Phoenix that are, you know, I guess going untreated more than others that like are really affecting the communities?
So are high poverty rates, high homeless rates
now,
definitely affect mental health issues?
How do high poverty rates affect homeless issues?
If you're struggling to figure out where you're going to get food that night, you're not going to be taking care of your mental health issues. If you're struggling to figure out where you're going to live, you're not going to be focused on your mental health issues. You're surviving. You're in survival mode. And so it's really important to remember that. You know, there's other factors, unemployment rates. You lose your job. You now had a purpose. You knew where you were going every day. Now you don't. Now you don't have a paycheck coming in, right? That brings a whole lot of other stressors that we need to be able to cope with and deal with. And if not, it can lead to mental health issues also. Let's see, in Arizona, we're the sixth leading state for incarceration. And so we incarcerate a lot of people. A lot of these people need mental health services. A lot of these people don't have access to the services when they need them and find themselves in jail. That's not where they're getting the mental health services. So incarceration is a huge deal here in Arizona. Our educational system, what better place to prevent mental illness, to prevent trauma that children see that can turn into mental illness than in the schools? But we don't do a good enough job supporting our educational system to make sure that they have the social workers, that they have the psychologists, that they have the counselors that can meet with these children, that can meet with these families to make sure that their needs are met.
Christina, going back, because yeah. You know, you covered two big things.
Big things.
Incarceration. Is there anything available for people who are locked up right now, mental illness-wise? Or does it have to be an extreme thing? Like right now, what is going on in Arizona's penitentiary system? Is there services available to people locked up for mental health?
Depends on where you are. There are some services, but not enough. People aren't getting the services that they need. They're not coming out healthier than they were when they went in.
Are they coming out worse?
I would say they're coming out worse. So we really need to focus on diversion programs, right? We don't want folks to go into jail unless they need to be there. So let's get the folks the services they need. 50% of people that go into jail have mental health services. Most of that's going untreated. So let's get them the help they need before they end in that system.
Going back to the education part, you talked about how to avoid kids who are exposed to traumatic situations. Can you give me an example of like something kids might go through that could really trigger off some mental health issues?
Sure. Seeing violence in their community, being removed from their parents, being part of the child welfare system, looking for a new home. You know, there's a lot of different traumatic events that can happen to a child that we know now based on research really has huge consequence on what those children are going to deal with as they grow older.
You know, going back to the Arizona causes, incarceration, you know, instead of incarcerating, getting these people help, would you say that, you know, I'm a little ignorant about, but would you say that, sure. that's going on like in the homeless community more? It's like a, you know, constant people getting locked up who just need mental health. Is that everyone or is it a certain type of people?
It's going on everywhere. Really, you know, mental illness doesn't discriminate, right? And it's really amongst all socioeconomic levels. So yes, our folks with lower income are going to have a whole nother set of issues and are would argue and deal with much more trauma, have many more factors that could lead to mental illness than others who don't. But there's also families in the middle and higher class who deal with their own sets of issues, right? Children who are coming home to an empty home and not having the support. People who are divided between families. So I think there's definitely more for the lower income folks. There's definitely other factors. It's not something that discriminates, all socioeconomic status.
What other things are you seeing right now? Is there in your career that you've been working, are you seeing an increase in certain things or a decrease in certain things? You know, since you've been, I mean, how long have you been working in the mental health industry? And what do you see as an ongoing problem? What do you see as an increasing problem?
I've been working in the mental health for 15 years now. I see that our youth, especially our millennials, are talking about mental illness much more than we used to. I think in general, as a society, we're talking much more about mental illness than we used to. Back in the day, we didn't talk about breast cancer, right? And now everyone's wearing pink. And so we want to be to the same place with mental illness. That's my goal before I pass someday, is that we're all having the conversation and we're wearing the color to represent mental illness. And we have the NFL talking about it. So we've done a lot. We've improved in those areas, right? We know veteran suicide's a big issue. We've done a lot around that. But we still have many issues. I mean, we need more behavioral health professionals. That's a huge issue across the state or across the U.S., really, especially here in Arizona. We just don't have enough behavioral health professionals. So if someone's in crisis, they're going to have to wait a little bit for service.
Now, is that because the jobs aren't available or just people aren't going into that field of
study? Because people aren't going to that field of study.
But there are jobs available.
Yeah. We're having a really, really hard time finding mental health professionals, filling jobs, keeping folks in the field. It's a tough field to be in, but it can be a really rewarding field to be in as well. So some of those big issues are really just lack of mental health professionals. Our emergency rooms aren't providing the mental health care that they really need to be providing to individuals when they go in. Some are doing a great job, but many aren't. I also mentioned, you know, being in crisis, there's often a wait. I mean, we have a crisis line that folks can call, which you can find on our website as well. It's great. You're going to have to wait a little bit for those crisis services to come out.
You want to give out the number?
Well, there's a couple different numbers based on the region that you're in.
Website, probably the best.
That's why it's just easiest to go to our website.
Okay.
And you'll find the numbers there.
Okay. Christina, going back, because I know for our company, because this company is founded by veteran owners and we're still, you know, a small mom and pop, the fact that the suicide rate among veterans is so high. Yeah, I guess I want to ask, why is it so high and what services are available to the veterans within regards to mental health?
So the veterans do have some services available through the Veterans Administration, through their insurance. Veterans deal with a whole another list of traumatic events that they deal with in theater than they do here. We don't equip our veterans with life when they return. And so they really struggle. And they also have a hard time reaching out for help and saying that, you know, we as a country decided that they were strong and brave enough to go fight for us. And so they still have that mentality that they are strong and brave and they don't need the assistance. Not all, but some. So we really want veterans to know that they deserve this help.
When they come back, Is it purely trauma? It's not environmental or anything, right? Is it purely from the trauma witnessed in the Middle East?
Much of it's from the trauma that they witnessed. Now, some won't have effects from that trauma for maybe 10 years after. So it's really different, and you really got to sort of watch for that. But a lot of it's then readjusting to life here and what that looks like and how different it was when they were in theater. We have so many more suicides. We have so many more deaths that occur once they return home than occur in theater. And that's just not right.
These stations, you know, we really target the Latino community. Are there any specific things you see amongst that community, mental health wise, that you see increasing, decreasing, or you see that there's a lack of when it comes to mental health?
Say definitely a lack of resources and a lot of stigma in that culture, right? We have a lot of people who have a hard time reaching out and think they can just pull themselves up by the bootstraps and figure it out on their own. And some can do that, but many can't. And they don't deserve to do that. You know, the other thing that we didn't touch on also is for low-income or moderate-income folks do have the ability to apply for our state's Medicaid program, which is Access. And Access has, they're doing a great job here in Arizona, and they have a great program. Some of the services that are available to them are medication assistance, peer support services. I'm not sure if you're familiar with peer support, but peer support is done by individuals who have gone through recovery themselves and are now trained to give back and try to provide hope and inspire others. Employment assistance, case management, skills training, cognitive rehabilitation, respite care, which is huge, crisis services. And then depending on the funding source, some are also available. Some also have the option of receiving therapy and transportation. So I would really encourage your listeners, if they don't have coverage and they are in need, to go to Access's website and apply. They can apply right there online for Medicaid here in our state.
Now, can they go through your website to find the link?
They could go through our website to find the link, yes.
Okay.
If it's not up there, I will make sure it's up there.
What's the website again?
It's www.mhaarizona.org.
So, Christina, the key is identifying and prevention. Can we talk about that a little more, just the prevention part?
Yeah, so I just have a couple stats that I want to share that will really sort of reemphasize the need for prevention. So 50% of mental health conditions begin in childhood. So let's intervene early, right? Let's get our schools, our families, our parents to talk with their children and discuss mental health. 50% of affected youth become adults who struggle with behavioral health issues.
What's that percentage again?
50%. It's an easy number. Just remember 50%. Then also 50% of all sick days and 50% of all disability benefits in wealthy countries are caused by mental illness. So again, rather than straining our system, waiting for folks to get to stage four, let's get the folks the help that they need early on. Let's have the conversation. Let's acknowledge that mental health may be an issue that they're dealing with. Call us for resources. Call us for support. Let's get them connected, because we don't want to get to a stage four crisis. You don't want to be receiving care in jails, in the emergency room. We want to nip that sooner than later.
Christina, do you guys got something coming up for either training or for the public to know about event-wise?
Yep, we have our 29th annual mental health conference on Wednesday, May 24th at Glendale Community College. And so that's a full-day conference. Will be our target audience is families and individuals living with mental health issues, as well as the mental health professionals. So we'll be discussing a lot of different things around working with law enforcement, navigating the crisis system, knowing your rights as a family member and an individual living with mental illness. There's going to be a lot of different things that are going to be discussed. Our goal is that folks really walk away from that conference feeling empowered to navigate this very complex system that we have here in Arizona and have the tools and skills that they need to advocate for both themselves and their loved ones.
And that's open to the public?
That is open to the public. Registration will be live next week.
Oh, wow. On the website?
On the website.
What's the website again?
www.mhaarizona.org.
So maybe, you know, maybe I'm good at hiding things. Maybe I'm good at quote unquote shaking it off and like people don't really notice, you know, maybe tears of a clown. What are some signs you can tell you? What can you tell yourself that, hey, you know what, it's time for me, I need help, you know, before it's too late? What are some things that are going on internally that make you think, okay, I need to speak to somebody?
You know, I, for one, realized that my quality of life and my purpose wasn't what I wanted for myself, right? And so I realized then that, you know what, I have depression, so I have depression. I mean, I have a small skin disease and I have a bad back and I have many other things, but I take care of those, right? I'm going to take care of the depression as well. And so realizing that I deserve that quality of life and there's more out there for me, so I'm going to take care of this. You know, my treatment was a couple months and I was feeling good. And so when you are dealing with mental health issues, it's a recovery. And so you may take two steps forward and one step back. But the important thing is that you're moving forward on your path to recovery and you're feeling good. You're giving back. You have purpose again. You're living that quality of life. You know, I'm for one, I have a smile on my face usually most of the time. I usually have a lot of energy when I'm around people. But that's sort of just how I am. And so most people wouldn't expect that I have depression, right? And so we don't often see it. We don't know it. So it's important to, you know, look for those signs, but then also acknowledge it. Hey, it's okay. One in four of us deal with it. It's all right.
You know, Christine, you brought up an interesting thing. You said a lot of times it's two steps forward, one step back. And, you know, I always tell people that, like, for any kind of thing, you know, whether it's a career or other things they got going on in their lives, child raising children, you know, for mental health, I really feel that, you know, that has to, like, really come through, right? It's like understand that, hey, there's setbacks, but you still move forward, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, my journey, I had a child 20 months ago, and after giving birth, I dealt with some postpartum depression. But I also knew and was prepared for that, knowing that I had depression. I also started dealing with a lot of anxiety, which I think many new parents deal with after having their first child. But again, I had to prepare for that. And now I have the skills to cope with that. And I know what I need to be healthy and work through those tough times. Because no matter what, we're always going to have obstacles in our life that are going to set us back, whether or not we have a mental illness. Right? We may not be diagnosed, but we're going to have a tough time in our life at times, and we're going to feel those depressive symptoms. But it's important that we have the coping skills to deal with those stressors.
And so, you know, you got the website, and then you guys are also on social media. Where on social media are you?
So we do a lot on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. So I definitely encourage folks to follow us.
What's the handle?
At MHA Arizona.
That's for Twitter and Instagram. Thank you for coming by, Christina. Can you let everybody know who you are and what you do one more time?
Christina Sabetta, Executive Consultant with Mental Health America of Arizona.
Thank you for listening to Community Circle.
Circling the things that matter for you and your neighbors. Community Circle is a service of Sierra H Broadcasting.